Welcome to the Living Waters Church Podcast.
Well, good morning. It's good to see you. I think we like Canada Day around here, especially Doug, but it's a good thing to celebrate. And it looks like there's people that are starting to even wear red, even though it's actually tomorrow. But that's good. I'm glad for it. I love Canada Day personally as well. It's special for me. Some of you may or may not know, I wasn't born in Canada. I was born in Great Britain, emphasis on the great of the Britain part. And I... Yeah, yeah. So I came over here to the colonies to, you know, get you all in line. So I wasn't born here. I grew up sort of with a bit of tension trying to figure out whether I was English or whether I was Canadian. And over the past few years, I've really come to realize that I just am fully West Coast Canadian. And I'm really proud to be that way. I don't know whether it was even just a couple of years ago when the Olympics came to town, there was something that changed in me where I all of a sudden went, this is the best place on earth. Like, this is absolutely fantastic. So I'm looking forward to celebrating Canada Day. Encourage you that if you don't have anything to do, to come down to Fort Langley and connect with some of the small business owners and all the people that are down here. There's going to be lots going on and a great chance to just park your car. We're going to leave the parking lots all open for anybody who wants to park there and come and hang out and have a blast. I'm going to be down here and maybe I'll see you around. But just out of curiosity, do we have other people who were not born in Canada in the room? And if you weren't, could you put your hand up? Okay. We're going to go across this way. I want you to shout out where you were born. Let's start here. Chicago. Chicago? Okay, so America. And where are you born?
I was born in
Vietnam. Vietnam? Yeah? Where?
Indonesia.
Indonesia. Indonesia. Any more in this section? Okay. Keep moving on here. Hands up. Just put your hands up again so I can see where you're from. Great Britain. I know that one.
Center of the universe.
Center of the universe. Scotland. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. We're not going to make any jokes about Scotland this morning. That's probably not a good idea. So, Peru. Okay, cool. And let's keep going as my mic is falling apart. Keep talking to me.
Germany.
Okay, where else?
Scotland.
I didn't know you were born in Scotland. Whereabouts? Okay, cool. And let's keep going.
The Netherlands.
The Netherlands, okay. Okay.
Switzerland.
Cool. Scotland again. There you go. Yeah, I'm glad I didn't make too many jokes about Scotland this morning, because there's a bunch of us. Cool. Well, it's good to be in Canada together. And I encourage you to come down to Fort Langley if you get a chance to, because people from all over the world come here and get to celebrate and see the birthplace of British Columbia, so it's pretty fun. We are going to look at this morning an excerpt from Psalm 92. So if you have your Bibles, you can open up to that. Verses 1 to 4. If you don't have it, as always, it's on the screen for you. So Psalm 92, verses 1 through 4. It is good to give thanks to the Lord, to sing praises to your name, O Most High, to declare your steadfast love in the morning and your faithfulness by night, to the music of the lute and the harp, and to the melody of the lyre. For you, O Lord, have made me glad by your work, and at the works of your hands I sing for joy. Over the past few years, I have become convinced that the chief or a chief characteristic of a healthy, growing, maturing Christian is thankfulness. Thankfulness, however, is kind of a funny thing, because it can be found at times in the most unlikely of lives and then be missing in the places that we think we would find a lot of it. It can elude the people we think should be most thankful, and yet we also see it rising out of poverty along with the stench of garbage heaps. Thankfulness is really a funny thing. I was talking with Victoria, who led... This is going to be an issue for the whole time, so I'm going to abandon this. Are we okay with that? Let me go with this. Let me shut that. Right on. I feel more gangster this way anyway. Especially if I hold it like this. So I was speaking with Victoria, who was leading our worship just a couple of days ago. And she has just come back from Uganda. And she had the opportunity to go there and experience some of the work that she had done from here. So Victoria came up with a few really interesting ideas and ways to give people clothing who don't have clothing. And one of those ways was something called the Pillowcase Project. And the whole idea was that people donate old pillowcases and then others turn them into dresses. And they did an incredible job of this. So for the past couple of years, Victoria has been doing this. And it's been unreal. But she'd never had the chance to go before, but she went just a couple of weeks ago for just under a month and was able to experience and see what had happened from all her work over here. And as we were talking about what that meant for her and what it looked like, she sort of said to me what I hear almost everybody who ever comes back from Africa say. Everybody who comes back from Africa has a very similar narrative. And they always seem to say, I was absolutely overwhelmed by the graciousness of the people and their thankfulness. They seem to have very little, and yet they're so thankful for everything that they have. There was a study done a number of years ago out of Boston College. It has a center for wealth and philanthropy. And one of their goals is to essentially study wealth in the world as it's spread out and how it affects people socially and emotionally, spiritually even, and to try and learn a little bit more about wealth and how it affects us. And one of the studies that they did recently was a study in a survey for people who were close to the billionaire mark. So extremely wealthy people. And they did a survey that was sort of anonymous for them, so they were able to send in their answers without anybody knowing who they are, and they were able to answer honestly about some of the things that they wrestle with in their lives. So they asked questions like, how do you deal with your family? How do you deal with your friends? What's it like having the pressure of wealth? And these people were able to share a lot of how they felt. One writer who was surveying the survey kind of said this as they were overlooking it. They wrote, a vast body of psychological evidence shows that the pleasures of consumption wear off through time and depend heavily on one's frame of reference. Most of us, for instance, occasionally spoil ourselves with outbursts of deliberate and perhaps excessive consumption. A fancy spa treatment, dinner at an expensive restaurant, a shopping spree. In the case of the very wealthy, such forms of consumption can become so commonplace as to lose all psychological benefit. Constant luxury is, in a sense, no luxury at all. Thankfulness is a funny thing. The psalmist says that it's a good thing, a good thing. It is good to give thanks to the Lord, to sing praises to your name, O Most High, to declare your steadfast love in the morning and your faithfulness by night. It's good to begin the day in the awareness of God's grace and God's love, and to live throughout that day in the awareness of his grace and love. It's good to end the day. It's good to recognize that our entire lives should be filled with the thankfulness for what God has given to us. To the music of the lute and the harp, and to the melody of the lyre. I've been talking to our worship leaders for months about getting some lutes involved on the stage here, and none of them think it's a very good idea whatsoever. But I'm convinced it is the key for church growth, and I'm going to keep asking them to do it. It's good to express towards the Lord. It's good to experience what he has done. It's good to express it communally, as we've done this morning. It's good to express it individually when we're gardening or we're going for a run. It's good to express our hearts to God, to experience the joy that comes from saying thank you. For you, O Lord, have made me glad by your work. At the works of your hands, I sing for joy. For you, O Lord, other translations would say, for you, O Lord, have thrilled me by what you have done. I am amazed by what you have done. And when we consider the things that we can be amazed by and what God has done for us, creation is one small example of that. We consider even simply creation. The psalmist responds with, I am thrilled with what you're able to do. But when we consider God's creative ability and then his ability to make things new, like we sang about this morning, we are thrilled at the kind of work that God can do in human lives. Now, this psalm is a little bit on the annoyingly happy side. Some of you would agree with me on that. And if you don't feel particularly glad or thrilled, it might even irk you a little bit. You might even say, that's really not how I'm feeling right now. I wouldn't say that I feel thrilled or glad with the Lord at this time in my life. And that's entirely possible. But imagine, if you will, with me, the perfect moment or the ideal conditions that might produce a thankful attitude. It's 8 a.m. and you are awoken not by your alarm clock or by the kids, but the gentle kiss of warmth delivered by a ray of sunlight on your face. You're not fully awake, however. You're resting in that in-between place of consciousness and Neverland. You're eventually coaxed from slumber after some time by the soft chirping of 3 to 5 birds outside your window. You open your eyes and can tell that it's a beautiful day, likely between 23 and 26 degrees. You stretch, and it's a good stretch. And somehow, you can tell you're going to have a great hair day. You just know it, even though you're going bald. Your sheets and comforter smell fresh and crisp because you changed them the prior evening. You're so smart. You stretch again and drift off once more, comatose at the prospect of a worry-free day. It's a holiday. No work for you. The kids are away, cared for by loved ones. Your final exam was written a couple of days ago. At this point in the morning, as you lie in your bed, as you feel completely and utterly carefree, you wouldn't be able to even spell the word stress. You wake for the final time, now roused by sound and scent. Bacon is cooking. Coffee is brewing. And is that fresh baked bread? As you anticipate the feast that somebody else prepares for you, the stereo begins to play your favorite music. Maybe it's Mozart. Maybe it's McCartney. And if you're Mike Vaders, it's Taylor Swift. You don't know how it gets better than this. You're feeling fearless. Finally, you roll out of bed and you make your way to the washroom. And from there, you find your way to the kitchen, where the table is full of breakfast delights you dared never to dream of. You sit down, knife and fork in hand, still in your pajamas, and exclaim, "It is good!" To give thanks to the Lord, to sing praises to your name, O Most High, to declare your steadfast love in the morning and your faithfulness by night to the music of the lute and the harp, to the melody of the lyre. For you, O Lord, have made me glad by the work of your hands. I sing for joy. Thankfulness is a funny thing. The psalmist says that it's a good thing. But sometimes it can be a conditional thing. The problem with this is that the Africans don't have bacon. The Africans don't have Mozart. The Africans, from what I can gather, don't have fresh linen. They actually don't have rain most of the time. And so the ideal conditions for thankfulness elude them. And if we're honest, they can tend to elude us as well. It's 6:15 a.m. and the screeching alarm clock doesn't have the chance to jerk you from your brief bit of rest because the toddler's catapulting knee drop already beat it to the punch. If not your kid, then it was your neighbor's noisy truck. If not the truck, it was your own mind already racing, fueled by the worries and the cares of your home, your job, your finances, or the growing concern of global warming, which must be real because it is raining again. The only smell that you are met with this morning is the stench of a fresh diaper or the sink full of dishes that someone left for you as a special blessing. The radio plays no music but forces traffic reports and bad news upon you, along with words like Dow Jones and NASDAQ. What is a NASDAQ? You should probably know that by now, you think to yourself. It's likely going to affect your retirement, for which you already feel ill-prepared at best. And even though you've not yet looked in the mirror, you know, you just know you're going to have a bad hair day because you're balding. You grab a cup of coffee and an overly bruised banana as you rush out the door and you jump into the car, which is filthy, by the way. You turn the key and the gas light comes on, and you're not out of your street before you realize you've left your phone in the house. You hit the brakes, spilling coffee on your pants, and with a jolt you exclaim, "It is good to give thanks to the Lord, to sing praises to your name, almost forget it." Thankfulness is a funny thing. The psalmist says that it's a good thing. Lots of the times it's a conditional thing. When we walked through the Lord's Prayer last month, Doug taught on the segment pertaining to forgiveness. And as he taught on that, his teaching included a parable that is from Jesus, which is one of, I think, the most disturbing parables from Jesus, but also one of the most interesting concerning human behavior. Essentially, the story goes like this. There's a king who has a lot of control and a lot of power. And there's a lot of debts in his kingdom. And one day he decides to call back all of his debts. One servant comes in particular who owes an exuberant amount of money, a ridiculous amount of money. And the king asks the servant to pay back, and the servant can't. And so the king decrees that the servant and his family will be sold into slavery until that debt is paid back. The servant says, "I can't pay. Please have mercy on me." And the king has mercy and says, "Your debt is forgiven. You're free to go." This first servant immediately leaves the court of the king to go and find another servant that owes him some money, and it's a significantly smaller amount of money than what the first servant owed. Upon finding this servant, the first servant grabs the second servant by the throat, throttling him, saying, "Pay me back what you owe me." The second servant says the same thing as the first, "I can't pay it back." And the first servant says, "Well, then you're going to prison until you can." The crowd that witnesses this is disturbed, and they relay the information of what had happened to the king. The king drags the first servant into his court and says, "You wicked servant. How could you act that way towards your fellow servant in light of how I acted towards you?" The story is primarily about forgiveness. But the thing about the story is that it's also about awareness and thankfulness. One of the implications of the story is that thankfulness isn't worked out or expressed in the court of the king, but it's worked out and expressed in daily life, in everyday matters of life. It's supposed to translate there. So thankfulness, and in turn forgiveness, isn't just about God and us. It's about us and others. And Jesus takes this very, very seriously. Not long after Jesus lived, there was a group of his followers that sprung up in a place called Thessalonica. The population was around 100,000. and it was a cultural and economic hub of its region. They had been ministered to by Paul and some of his friends, and so there was a small group of Christians there. Generally, they were doing pretty well. They were loving each other, they were living simply, and they were being pretty generous. But they did have a few problems. There was some relational tension in the community. And when I say relational tension, I don't mean Mrs. A doesn't like Mrs. C's soup at the church picnic. There was some serious relational discord, some serious problems that were going on. There was prolonged external pressure and persecution in their city. They expected to be persecuted, but they didn't think that it was going to last as long as it did and go as deep as it did as well. And on top of this, some of the people in their church had recently passed away. They died. And so because of these sort of three main areas, there's a weightiness on the church. They're doing well generally, but they feel overwhelmed, they feel discouraged, and they have questions about what's going to happen to their friends now that they've died. They're really young Christians, and they haven't learned yet exactly what life is supposed to exactly look like after their friends had died. So they're concerned that their friends were going to miss out on Jesus and life with him eternally. And so Paul writes them a letter to simply encourage them. And he reminds them of how well they're doing. He says, you're doing so well. He teaches them how to deal with the relational discord. He reminds them that the external pressures are to be expected. And he tells them that they need to stick together. He also clears up their questions about the friends who've died and assures them that everything is actually going to be okay. Towards the end of the letter, he writes this. And remember, this is in reaction to external pressure and persecution, severe internal discord and death, very present death, difficult things going on in this community. Paul writes this in 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 14. Brothers and sisters, we urge you to warn those who are lazy, encourage those who are timid, take tender care of those who are weak, and be patient with everyone. See that no one pays back evil for evil, but always try to do good to each other and to all people. Always be joyful. Never stop praying. Be thankful in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you who belong to Christ Jesus. Paul's instruction here models some of his practice in the earlier part of the letter, and it models how he apparently lives, as we see in other parts of his writing in the scriptures. His prayers, Paul's prayers, are often rooted in thankfulness, specifically thankfulness for the people that he's surrounded by and in relationship with. And so his instruction about and practice of prayer often includes mentions of joy and thankfulness. So for Paul, there's some kind of connection between joy and thankfulness and prayer. And some have said that it's supposed to be a kind of cyclical effect, that prayer with thankfulness will lead to joy. But as we see in Paul's life and the lives of the other people in the New Testament, prayer, however expressed, rooted in thankfulness, brings about an experience, though it varies from case to case, of joy. Prayer, however expressed, rooted in thankfulness, brings about an experience, though it differs from person to person, of joy. It doesn't always look the same for everybody. So Paul experiences and he prays with joy, even though he's in dire circumstances for much of his Christian life, in prison or beaten or doesn't have a lot of food or on the run. Much of the time, his physical circumstances aren't great. But the key was that his thankfulness was always directed towards God. He didn't look at the problem, he looked at the problem solver. And his thankfulness was primarily rooted in God's love and grace. And no one could take that away. We sang that this morning. Nothing can hold me back from you. The other major motivation for Paul when it came to thankfulness was people. Rarely do we hear mentions of his thankfulness because of the product of his physical condition or circumstances, whether they're good or bad. He's constantly saying thank you to God for people. And he didn't have a perfect social circle. he didn't have complete harmony with everybody that he had ministered to and led. In fact, he walked through some pretty incredibly difficult stuff. He shared the gospel with many different communities, and several of them eventually turned away from him, called him a liar, and spat him in the face. So he didn't experience perfect harmony in his relationships all the time. But for the people that he did experience harmony with, he was always, always deeply thankful. And this seemed to bring him joy. I was brought up to be fairly polite, supposed to mind my P's and Q's, and that was expected of me in my home. It was also expected of me when I went to other people's houses. It was obligatory in my life. And so I have been psychologically conditioned to be polite for the most part. It's just something that's in me. It's completely and utterly obligatory. That's how I was raised. It's easy to regard thankfulness in our Christian lives as simply obligatory. It's easy to regard it, similarly to how we were talking about prayer and a couple of months ago, as just something that I'm supposed to do. Yeah, Jesus seemed to do so many incredible things. He died on the cross for me. He provides for me. My life feels relatively okay. I feel like I should be more thankful. And so we have a sense of obligation that comes along with thankfulness. We go, oh, I just feel like I should be more thankful. I don't always feel that way. But the truth of it is, if we look really carefully at thankfulness, that thankfulness is actually a gift. It's another grace from God. Even as we say thank you to him, we are transformed and empowered and overjoyed. Paul and the psalmist and the others would say that saying thank you is in itself a practice or a lifestyle that begets joy and contentment, even in the absolute worst situation. So thankfulness might be our great prescription for joy, or maybe our remedy for discontentment, or even the antidote for materialism or greed. The beauty of thankfulness is that it has the ability to disregard bad conditions. And the power of thankfulness is that it won't be controlled by outer circumstances. Victoria's friends in Africa teach us that. Over and over and over again. Thankfulness can trump absolutely anything. Death, sickness, poverty, extreme relational discord. Now, I wouldn't presume to subscribe for you a brand of thankfulness that will solve all of your problems. I wouldn't presume to do that. But I would encourage you to explore thankfulness this summer. I would encourage you, if you've not adopted a spirit of thankfulness into your daily life, to start to explore it a little bit. Start to unpack the gift of thanks. It's a deep and beautiful thing. I've been doing this over the past couple of years, and it is, honestly, I can tell you, it's changed how I lived. It's changed my mental state. It's changed my emotional state. It's been absolutely phenomenal. I encourage you to unpack it. There's a few simple ways that we can learn to say thank you. I don't usually throw lists up, but these are just some really simple ways in case you're going, I feel like I am in a really nasty spot and I don't know how to even thank God because I can't even get the words out of my mouth or in my heart. First of all, we can thank God for God. We can explore his multifaceted grace and mercy. Many times we thank God for one thing, and that's the cross. We thank God for the fact that he has forgiven us of our sin, and he's absolutely done that, and we should completely thank him for that. 110%. But grace is multifaceted. Grace works itself out in our lives in places that we least expect, and many times we don't even necessarily see. So I encourage you to go on a grace quest. Start looking for God's simple graces in your life, and we can respond to him in that way for a lot of the things we take granted. Second of all, thank God for people because they matter most. Look at the people that are around you. Look at your family, look at your friends, look at your Christian church community, look at what's around you, and realize that this is what life is about. Jesus didn't come to die so that our mortgages could get paid off. He came to die for people. People matter. And when we focus our attention to God, when we look at God, We thank him for who he is. And then secondly, we look at who God has given us in our lives. That can bring a level of joy that's almost inexpressible. Thirdly, we can thank God for conditions. We absolutely can. That's appropriate. There's nothing wrong with us being thankful for Canada on Canada Day. There's nothing wrong with being thankful for a home. There's nothing wrong with being thankful for health or physical provision. That's completely appropriate. The issue is sometimes that list is inverted for us. And we think about conditions, and then we think about people, and then we think about God. When really, thankfulness will begin to stem when we start with an attention towards God, an intention towards people, and then conditions are more towards the end. I'm not saying the conditions aren't important. They're very important. They're very hard to deal with at times. But judging from the lives of the people that we survey in the scriptures, this seems to be how they experience joy and thankfulness. I had a really great day yesterday. I was able to have the majority of the day off. And so I woke up at a decent time, and it wasn't too hot yet, and so I thought, I'll go for a bike ride. I've started getting into cycling, and it's a lot of fun. Fort Langley is a great place to do that in. So I got on my bike, and I went for a ride, and I felt great because I finished off on a really, really difficult hill, and my quads were just screaming, but it was a blast. I got home, and I got to take my time and get cleaned up, and I got to eat whatever I wanted because my quads were screaming. And so I made bacon and eggs and had a banana and just sat there. I put on some music, and it wasn't too hot yet in my apartment, so it was just really nice to just relax. That was great. And then, you know, towards the afternoon, I came down to Fort Langley, and I wandered around. I connected with some people, and I had a really nice iced mocha coffee thing, and that was delicious. And then later in the afternoon, I went and helped set up for it was like a surprise birthday for someone, so I was on the barbecue there, and that was a blast. And then later in the evening, I got to come home back to Fort Langley, and I met up with a friend, and in the cool of the evening, we got out our baseball gloves and just threw a ball back and forth. It was a great day. It was a really great day. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But the baseball was great, and the bacon was great, and the bike riding was great, but the very best part of my day was in that afternoon when I drove to park in our parking lot here, and I caught one of our young adults in the garden weeding all by himself. Now, some of you know that this garden that we've got out there recently just came in, just the last couple of months. And with all the rain and all the sun and the back and forth, it's gotten kind of out of control. And we've been asking for help in the bulletin, and everyone's got full busy lives. And at the end of the day, weeds are weeds. People are more important, so we get that. And that's all right. We'll get to it when we get to it. But this guy had worked on the Saturday morning and was in this area and remembered that the garden really needed weeding. So unprompted, just because he felt like it, he showed up with a garbage can and he spent a good probably 2 to 3 hours in the main part of the front garden there just weeding everything out. And he said, you know, we were talking about welcome, and so for me, I just feel like this is a part of it. That was the best part of my day because I saw somebody taking action. I saw somebody saying, I care about my community. I care about what this physical space in Fort Langley says to this community. And it was one of those moments, you know, when you've had a bit of a heavy week and you see somebody and they're doing something really kind and you just go, oh, thank goodness humanity isn't entirely evil. Do you ever have those feelings before? Yeah. And then I heard later on the evening that there were a group of people that did go to the Palmer's house and did help them pack up their house because they're not able to do it physically. There was a whole bunch of people that showed up, 12 to 15, and helped them pack. And I went, again, awesome, bang on. I'm so thankful for people. I'm so thankful for this community. And if we pick our heads up every now and then and look at each other, we can be absolutely inspired by each other. I really believe that's a huge part of what church is about. I'm really thankful for you guys, Aaron and Christina, for taking the risk that you have taken and saying we feel it's time for a new season and we're going to step out. We don't know what it's going to look like, but we know God has said step out and you're doing it. I'm thankful for that because that deeply encourages me. It deeply encourages me. It goes, if they can do it with a couple of kids and a house and everything looks, I can do something like that. I'm deeply encouraged by that. I'm deeply encouraged by you, Heather, who's walking through a tough season, saying goodbye to something that's hard to say goodbye to. And yet I can tell that you're leaning on him, that you're trusting him, and that you're leaning into the community as well. I can tell that. I'm thankful for you, because when I see you walking through what you're walking through, I go, okay, Heather's growing. She can do it. I can do it too. I'm thankful for you. Barb, I'm really thankful for you. So I've watched you walk through this season, which has been a hard season, a difficult season. And instead of leaning away from Christian community, you have leaned into it with everything you have. And you're trying to explore joy and thankfulness in the midst of loss. I'm thankful for you. I really am. I'm thankful for people in the back booth, for Rob and for our media personnel and everybody who is involved. I'm thankful for Heath. I'm thankful for the people that none of us really realize do what they do. They come here, they set up early before anybody else. They don't get the glory because they're not on the stage, but they're back there. They do have really comfortable chairs, that's true. But I'm thankful for you guys and how you give, because every time you're there, every time you're serving, it reminds me that we're doing something good together and we're moving forward. I could keep going and we can get cheesier and cheesier, but I'm not going to. We're going to stop there. This is a great day to be thankful. And so as whatever you're doing, whether it's with family, if you're coming back for the picnic, or you're just celebrating Canada Day, I encourage you to look to God, to look to people, and be thankful for each other, because we are who he has given to each other, and it's a beautiful thing. Why don't we stand? I'm going to pray, and we'll go from there. Jesus, we thank you for the gift of thankfulness. And often we don't know how to engage it, Jesus. We're often blinded by our conditions. But we ask in Jesus' name that you would give us real clarity of your grace. We ask in Jesus' name that we would be able to see and express your multifaceted grace. That this week, if there's been blinders on our eyes to your goodness, that those would be lifted. And I pray that we'd be able to see what you're up to around us. I pray also that you would help us to see the people around us that you have put in our lives to bless us as good things. And I pray that we would be able to experience relationship and community in deeper levels. I pray we'd begin to appreciate and get to know each other more. I pray that we wouldn't miss out on what you've put right in front of our faces. Our parents, our siblings, our children, our husbands, our wives, our friends. Lord, I pray we'd become amazed at the works of your hands, because they're right in front of us. We pray all these things in Jesus' precious name. Everyone said, amen. Enjoy the rest of your long weekend. Happy Canada Day.